Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
This week, three of Florida's elected officials addressed the Republican National Convention in support of the party's presidential candidate, Donald Trump.
This year, we get to fire the politicians.
Also this week, most Americans land somewhere in the middle of the political spectrum, but this month's back-to-back national conventions are magnifying the country's growing ideological divide.
And nothing can unite a party like someone like Hillary Clinton, who stands for everything that we're against.
Speaking of politics, we'll also take a look at the viability of political polling, beefing up security at polling places, and a successful program aimed at keeping former prison inmates from reoffending. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. After a bruising primary, the GOP has officially settled on Donald Trump to lead the party into November. Nick Evans reports elected officials from Florida, likely one of the most important swing states come Election Day, were out in force to support the Republican candidate.
Back in March, Donald Trump dominated a four-candidate field in Florida's Republican presidential primary, winning every county but Miami-Dade. On the eve of that primary, Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi endorsed Trump. And at this week's Republican National Convention, that allegiance translated into a plum speaking gig.
Please give a warm welcome to Florida's Attorney General, Pam Bondi.
Bondi opened with a warning.
November 8th is a day of reckoning for all those who have abused their power. It's the day when we, the people, will take back our government.
And Florida's top prosecutor made a pitch based on the next president's impact on the U.S. Supreme Court.
I know Donald, and I am proud to know Donald. He will appoint conservative justices who will defend rather than rewrite our Constitution.
Trump's big win in Florida also led to an endorsement from Governor Rick Scott. At the time, he said, quote, "The voters are speaking clearly. They want a businessman outsider who will dramatically shake up the status quo in Washington." It's a story that could just as easily describe Scott's own rise in Florida. And Wednesday night, the governor returned to that theme.
Finally, I have some great news. This is the time America has been waiting for. This year, we get to fire the politicians.
But Trump's primary win had a different kind of fallout, too. When Republican presidential hopeful Marco Rubio couldn't muster a win in his home state, he chose to back out of the race. Florida's junior senator has withheld a formal endorsement of Trump, but in a video address, he explained why he'd back the Republican over a Democrat.
Hillary Clinton does not have the honesty, the courage, or the independence to be the president we need for the next 4 years, after the president we've had for the past eight. But unlike Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump is committed to cut taxes, curb spending, and get our national debt under control. Unlike Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump takes seriously the threats from Islamic radicals and is committed to rebuilding our military.
And the triumvirate of Florida officials piqued the interest of some viewers. Here's Google data editor Simon Rogers.
Did Rubio endorse Trump? Spike 1,800% after his speech. And people were trying to look for a speech to find out what happened. With Rick Scott, there was a big spike in Florida in searches for his approval rating. And also with Pam Bondi, it was much more people asking actually basic questions, I would say, around her, like how old she was and what she said about Trump.
But he says their remarks, all coming on Wednesday night, were overshadowed by another U.S. senator wrestling with endorsing Trump.
Stand and speak and vote your conscience. Vote for candidates up and down the ticket who you trust to defend our freedom and to be faithful to the Constitution.
So last night was really all about one person. That person was Ted Cruz.
But Senator Cruz's party over candidate sermon did little to derail the proceedings. Trump accepted his nomination Thursday night. With a speech long on dark themes, but short on explicit policy. Fact-checkers, as they have throughout the race, poked holes in many of Trump's claims, but those corrections have yet to temper the fervor of his most ardent supporters. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
Every 4 years, Democrats and Republicans hold elaborate conventions to celebrate their candidate of choice and stir up party support. But the events this month also offer an uninterrupted view into the country's partisan divides. Kate Payne reports.
Presidential candidates have a habit of picking up unofficial mottos along the campaign trail. There's Drill Baby Drill and Yes We Can, and at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, a new chant emerged, Lock Her Up, referring to Democratic frontrunner Hillary Clinton. Here's Lieutenant General Michael Flynn leading the chant.
Lock her up. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
The national conventions, Republican and Democrat, are a platform for the most impassioned political activists, who also tend to be the most partisan. Which means the conversations happening at this month's back-to-back conventions could be deeply divisive.
And nothing can unite a party like someone like Hillary Clinton, who stands for everything that we're against.
That's Evan Power, a Republican delegate representing Congressional District 2 in Cleveland. Democrats attending the upcoming convention in Philadelphia could say the same about GOP nominee Donald Trump. According to the Real Clear Politics average of available polling data, both Trump and Clinton are viewed unfavorably by more than 55% of people. So how did the country end up with these two deeply divisive candidates? University of South Florida Emeritus Professor Michael Gibbon says the nature of the parties is changing.
We went from a period where in the 50s and 60s you had conservatives and liberals in the Democratic Party. You had conservatives and liberals in the Republican Party.
Data from the Pew Research Center shows that increasingly liberals are Democrats and conservatives are Republicans. It may sound obvious today, but that wasn't always the case. Gibbons and other academics argue this ideological restructuring stems from the Southern strategy of the 1950s and 60s. Republicans appealed to the racial resentment of Southern whites to win their votes, transforming much of the region into a GOP stronghold. And over the past two decades, the parties have become even more divided.
Well, it's probably as bad as it's ever been, I mean, in the 20th century at least.
If this month's back-to-back conventions feel more partisan than usual, that's because they are. According to the Pew Research Center, the number of Americans who deeply mistrust the other party is on the rise. 27% of Democrats and 36% of Republicans see the other party as a threat to the nation's well-being. Longtime Democratic player John Osman believes politics have never been tidy, but he says that lately civility has taken a blow.
You have to work and you have to organize in a system which in many ways discourages participation.
And he says the advent of the 24-hour news cycle and online journalism doesn't help.
Everybody has a bullhorn, the Twitter, the Facebook, you know, the instant photos, the instant blog. And as a consequence, we're hearing more angry voices unfiltered rather than them being filtered in the old days when they'd have to go through TV commentators or they would have to go through newsprint.
Meanwhile, Osman says Congress is grinding to a halt, making little progress on gun control or funding for the Zika virus, all while an empty chair on the Supreme Court gathers dust. Jackson County GOP leader Jim Peacock, like most Americans, wants lawmakers to compromise.
You know, they're putting forth some good ideas, but it's hard to get them passed. And I don't know how to get around it.
According to the Pew Research Center, the deeply partisan animosity stems from a minority of party activists. Most people don't believe the other party is a threat to the country, and most people want lawmakers to meet in the middle. But those moderates are losing ground. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Still to come on Capitol Report, if only there were a magic crystal ball to predict who might win the presidency in November. Oh, well, that's right. We have polls, don't we? Well, the question is, how predictive are they really?
We have essentially very large sciences that are geared to figuring out how to manipulate people's voting choices. And stuff we're picking up is kind of trivial, really.
Of course, everyone hopes this year's elections are peaceful affairs, but what if they aren't? Florida officials are getting ready just in case.
It's important for us to be able to support not only the realities of the possibility of some disruptions, but the rumors.
Is Florida ready to take care of babies born with Zika-related developmental delays?
Well, it's an interesting question. I believe that we will be. I would say as of this second, probably no.
And there's a growing recognition in Florida that keeping ex-cons from returning to prison is a job that begins the first day they get out of prison.
The guys that we're afraid of are the guys that we need locked up for a long time. The guys that we're mad at have done something stupid. We just need to figure out how we can help them.
Now that the primaries are over, Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump and his Democratic challenger Hillary Clinton are working to woo voters to their respective sides. There's a large amount of educated guessing going on about who will eventually win the presidency, and polling firms appear to often have their fingertips on the pulse about how Americans are feeling about their candidates. Or do they? Lynn Hatter reports.
Polls released in recent weeks have conflicting conclusions. Some say Democrat Hillary Clinton continues to lead the presidential race, while others say Republican Donald Trump is ahead. So which is right? Retired Florida State University political scientist Lance DeHaven Smith says it depends on what the surveys are asking and whether people like the candidate.
As crazy as it sounds, if you want to be elected president, you've got to like people. And if you survey people and ask them who they like, you're going to get a fairly more accurate account of who they're going to vote for than if you ask them who they're going to vote for.
So that's interesting, right? Because right now we see so many surveys that say Hillary Clinton has a high unfavorable rating or Donald Trump has a high unfavorable, you know, ranking. And you seem to be saying, well, likability might be a better metric than asking the question, who are you going to vote for?
Yes. Think back to the 1992 election that Bill Clinton won. Now, understand, people think he beat George H.W. Bush, but there was a third-party candidate, Ross Perot, who gave the election to Clinton. But the one thing you have to admit about Clinton is he liked people, maybe to a fault. he liked women, but I mean, he liked people, and that went a long way, and it still does. It's kind of amazing because he was impeached. He wasn't convicted, but he was impeached by the House, and he had a lot of scandals around him, and yet he's a much beloved ex-president. Hillary Clinton. Frankly, the biggest problem she's got is she screams when she talks. It's just off-putting. And I think if she were a man, it wouldn't make as much difference. But for some reason, it strikes people as jarring. And then there are all these scandals and everything following her. So most people could not tell you about the scandals. They couldn't tell you in any detail about I'm sure that people who follow this could. But the average American couldn't tell you anything about the nature of the charges levied against her. But they could tell you whether they trust her or not.
DeHaven Smith says it's become increasingly hard to get a good read on what people are thinking. People may not tell the truth over the phone, but they're more comfortable giving answers online. DeHaven Smith says the more accurate polls are the ones being done by the campaigns, with results that are unlikely to be released to the public. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Florida's elections chief says he's worried about potential disturbances during this year's elections, and he's working with law enforcement and supervisors of elections across the state on a plan. Sasha Cordner has that story.
Speaking during a recent Florida Sheriff's Association conference, Secretary of State Ken Detzner says Florida will likely play an important role in deciding the next president of the United States.
People are at a heightened state of anxiety, of awareness, and that they are in a position to want to turn out and vote and participate in voting.
But he told the sheriffs that there are also other people that they are concerned about.
I'm talking about the potential for interruptions and disturbances during the election period.
Detzner says he's already in talks with the Florida Department of Law Enforcement in devising a statewide plan along with the supervisors.
And it's important for us to be able to support not only the realities of the possibility of some disruptions, but the rumors.
So he says elections officials are also monitoring social media.
People get worried or they take action as a result of something that they may have heard or seen on social media. So we are actively engaged in monitoring that on a regular basis.
And Etzner adds the new head of the Florida State Association of Supervisor of Elections has been discussing best practices with other supervisors as well. That's Chris Shambliss, Clay County Supervisor of Elections.
Making contacts with key personnel, speaking about, you know, potentials for road closures or diversions.
Shambliss says while he won't comment on any rumors surrounding potential disturbances, he says he really feels local and state elections officials are just planning for anything that could happen during the presidential election.
I, as a military member, really look to plan for any type of contingency rather than reacting to a contingency. So I believe that's our primary focus and goal.
As for outgoing Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho, he says he's not too worried. Sancho's work has gained national recognition, and he's been the area's supervisor for almost 30 years.
I don't give credence to any rumors. We're looking for an excellent election. The process works well here. We've never had any serious trouble in our polls or during the elections. And hopefully that'll continue. I think elections in Leon County look very different than elections in the rest of the state of Florida. They work well at high volume here without any problems. And that's not something you can say about some of the jurisdictions in the state of Florida.
But Sancho says that's not to say that he and other elections officials on his staff are not prepared. He says they're all trained in the event of an emergency.
And if there's any problem at all, they'll be contacting law enforcement, ensuring that voting goes smoothly. Every election, we maintain complete telephonic connection with every polling place. Again, that's something that not every county does. It's expensive, but that's something we have to have because of safety, if no other reason, and then reporting the results.
Meanwhile, in addition to the Florida Sheriff, Secretary of State Detzner says he plans to talk to the Florida police chiefs about the importance of election security at the end of this month. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
While Florida health officials are investigating the first potential local mosquito transmission of the Zika virus in the continental U.S., some are questioning whether the country is prepared to care for a growing number of children born with microcephaly. Regan McCarthy looks into Florida's plans.
A group of Democrats spent the last weeks before Congress took its summer break pushing for a plan to earmark funding to fight the Zika virus. President Barack Obama has asked for $1.9 billion to research and prepare for Zika. But Florida Senator Bill Nelson says the legislation that came up for a vote wasn't a real solution.
Because it had all kinds of extraneous things in there, highly partisan provisions that were poison pills, And yet, this is how this Zika crisis is being treated as a matter of partisan politics.
The measure included a provision that would have impacted funds for Planned Parenthood, a move Nelson says is nonsensical. And Florida Congresswoman Karen Castor agrees.
It included language making access to contraceptive services more difficult at home and abroad. It was really a senseless and counterproductive restriction when responding to a virus that can spread through sexual transmission.
But March of Dimes chief medical officer Ed McCabe insists the government will end up paying for the effects of the Zika virus one way or another, either through protection or care.
We're hearing that with severe microcephaly caused by Zika, it could be $10 million up to or even more than $10 million per baby. That's 100 babies would be $1 billion.
Meanwhile, in Florida, one baby has already been born in the state with microcephaly as a result of the virus. The child was born to a Haitian mother who had contracted Zika. Officials say she traveled to the United States to give birth. They referred the child to the state's Early Steps program.
And what this program does, the Early Steps program, is provides coaching and educational supports, as well as medical rehabilitation therapies to children from ages birth to 36 months of age that are having developmental delays.
That's Robert Porcaro, Chief Operating Officer of the Easter Seals of Florida. The Department of Health contracts with the Easter Seals to run local Early Steps programs. But is the program ready to provide that care to a potentially growing number of children born with microcephaly?
Well, it's an interesting question. I believe that we will be. I would say as of this second, probably no.
Funding for Early Steps comes from both state and federal sources. And while a few years ago, Florida funding for the program seemed questionable, Porcaro says that's no longer the case.
The legislature did, as you may or may not be aware, last year infuse $13 million into the Early Steps program, $11 million of which is in recurring funds, and $2 million was in non-recurring. So the Early Steps State Office out of Tallahassee will be using that $2 million for special projects and what have you. But the remaining 11 went into each local Early Steps program around the state for service provision.
And he says that's the main reason Early Steps might not be ready for the impact of Zika yet.
The money is there, as the legislature had had the increased comprehension of the urgency and the need for the funding, but it takes time to ramp up. So as we identify more and more children with the need for the services, we have to create expand the infrastructure. There are more service coordinators that are needed to handle the influx of children. There's going to certainly be an increased need for providers to be able to offer the services to ramp it up.
But Porcaro says he thinks the system is actively moving forward and will be ready when the need arises. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Florida's unemployment rate held steady at 4.7% from May to June. The State Department of Economic Opportunity figured the actual number of people without jobs actually edged down by some 5,000 during the period. Out of a total workforce of just under 9.75 million, the preliminary monthly numbers released today pegged 453,000 Floridians as unemployed in June. At the same time, Governor Rick Scott highlighted private sector job growth in the news release that contained the new figures, touting the more than 102,000 new jobs created in the first half of this year. Florida's unemployment rate stood at 5% when the year began. Finally this week, 36,000 men and women stream out of Florida's prisons every year, most without a job or decent housing. Advocates say public safety depends on their successful transition, and that depends on changing attitudes and duplication programs like Jacksonville's New Hope Initiative. More on that from Jim Ash.
A recent breakfast meeting of the Greater Tallahassee Area Chamber of Commerce drew a typical crowd.
The guest speaker was anything but typical. Social worker Lauren Walker was there to make the case that a job applicant with a criminal record is worth considering. She reminded the audience that felons who find work are much less likely to reoffend.
My message today is really just about one question. What are you willing to do to keep Tallahassee and the Big Bend region a safe place to live, work, and raise your families?
Walker is chairman of the Big Bend Area After Reentry Coalition. The umbrella organization coordinates services for ex-offenders trying to get back on their feet. Walker says many of the 2,000 people returning to the Big Bend region from prison next year will need transitional housing, drug treatment, and job training. But she says the state won't be much help.
Guess how many transitional beds they provide in this region for 2,200 people. Anyone? How many? Six. Six beds they pay for. And those are just for men.
The message isn't lost on Matt Brown. The CEO of Tallahassee State Bank has spent years volunteering with ex-offenders. He says the barriers to success for an ex-felon are high, but he says they have to be overcome if society is ever going to solve the crime problem.
I think it's housing and employment are the two most important factors in reducing recidivism of people coming going back to prison. And it's one of the most important things we can do to help rebuild the family structure in our community.
Brown says Operation New Hope in Jacksonville is showing some of the best results in Florida. The program has linked ex-felons with more than 200 businesses in the past decade and boasts a 72% retention rate. New Hope offers temporary housing, drug treatment, education, and job training. Tallahassee advocates are modeling programs after it now. New Hope founder Kevin Gay says most employers don't know how grateful an ex-felon can be to get a job.
The guys that we're afraid of are the guys we need to lock up for a long time. The guys that we're mad at that have done something stupid, we just need to figure out how we can help them.
When New Hope accepted grants from former President George W. Bush's faith-based initiative, it couldn't take violent felons. But over the years, New Hope has gotten better at testing, evaluating, and tracking, and it's been able to open its doors wider.
And so we're bringing people a really vetted pool of workers to the workforce. And the good part about it is they're answering the call.
About 30 program participants have violence in their background, but that may grow as the program gets more sophisticated, Gay says. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Regular Capital Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capital Report is provided by Ken Smith, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FBR Cap Report. And please join us again next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.